It's time for our Loving Conflict half-hour reading of the day. I'm Max Rivers, and we're going to be talking about embodied NVC and what to do with unsatisfied needs today. So we're still in Chapter 2. Today will be the end of Chapter 2, I think. I realize that in order to do this whole book would take several months at the rate that I'm going, so we're not going to make it all the way through the book. You will have to get the book eventually to get all the amazing wisdom that's in here. So we've been talking about needs for the last couple of days, and we've started talking about the healing process. You have enough theory now in order to begin to actually use the technology the way we have our clients using the technology. So today we're going to start talking about what you can do in real-life situations to deal with needs that maybe can't be met in the current moment. So page 64, we're going to start with parking your needs. Needs are like beach balls. They never forget. If you hold a beach ball underwater and then let it go, it pops back up to the surface. It's never going to forget its desire to surface. Not even if you held it underwater for a year. Needs are like that. Needs aren't attached to time. This turns out to be one of their most flexible qualities. It could be just fine that the current situation doesn't present an opportunity for satisfaction because the need, or heart's desire, as we sometimes call them, isn't going to go away. It will wait until it does get satisfied. A lot of our same old arguments are the result of our giving ourselves a deadline and then thinking the deadline is real. It's not, at least not as far as the need is concerned. So a lot of stress and upset comes from not understanding how flexible needs are and about the how and the when of their satisfaction. Parking your needs gives you choice about how you get your different needs met. You may deeply love your parents, but they may not be the best people for you to get your grown-up needs met from. You may have a best friend from childhood who you only see once a year. Maybe your daughter-in-law, who you hoped would be like a daughter to you, isn't. So maybe you need to meet that need for mothering or for mentoring a young person at work or with a neighbor or some other time. There will be people in your life who just don't seem to want to or be able to meet your needs, or at least not in your timetable. Instead of trying to change them, don't try to change people. It's the number one source of those same old arguments. Try parking those needs when you're with them and bring them out with other people who easily and naturally respond to you in a way that your heart desires. So there's just a lot of opportunity, particularly in terms of time, for you to be flexible. This is particularly useful, say, if you have what we call a two-cup situation. You're waiting at home for your spouse to come home. You've got something that you're really needing from them. And they come home from work, and they're a total mess, and clearly not in a resourced place to meet your needs. That's not a bad thing, because you can park your need, and it would be a good idea too. Give empathy to your partner, help them feel more resourced, seen, meet their needs for being seen, heard, and understood. Maybe help them identify what it is they're needing. Maybe meet their need for rest or make them a meal or something. And with your need neatly parked, you'll be able to give them your full attention. As a mediator, I park my needs every time I do a session, and I'm able to focus all my attention on my clients. And then at a point where your partner or whoever is in a resourced state, you can unpark your need. You'll notice that we're talking about parking. I mean, if you park your car, that doesn't mean you'll never get it again, right? It means that it's always available for you. You just have to go get it where it's parked and unpark it. Parking needs, very useful skill. Getting comfortable with uncomfortable feelings. People in our culture have little tolerance for uncomfortable feelings. They are likely to ignore the discomfort or in some other way turn off these subtle, unpleasant messages. But because once they've been stimulated, needs don't go away until they're satisfied, this approach is bound to cause problems later. Because our needs, that we talked about earlier, use body sensations to communicate their state. So if your needs are met, they communicate through some satisfied feeling. And if a need of yours is unsatisfied, it creates some discomfort in you. So by ignoring the discomfort that you're feeling, you're shutting yourself off from the need. Think about the need for nourishment. When the need for nourishment arises, it creates this kind of uncomfortable feeling in your stomach, maybe a sense of emptiness or warmth or something. If you just completely ignored it, as we do some of our needs, you could starve to death, because needs are life-affirming. They're here in order to bring you all the satisfaction that there is in life. Instead of accepting these mild, uncomfortable feelings as a vital message from our beautiful needs, many people travel up into their head, experience the discomfort as a problem, and now it becomes the brain's job to solve it. Our brains, beautiful things that they are, do not know what they can and cannot do. Anytime we give them an assignment, they plow ahead. This process removes us completely from the arena where the need resides, in our body. Meanwhile, the cause of the sensations, the need, is not being considered by the mind, because the mind has framed the problem in terms it understands. Now it gets to work constructing strategies to solve the problem. Remember that image of the couple facing back to back and throwing darts at opposite walls? And we can see that the target actually is on a completely different wall. The mind often does that because the mind doesn't know the target, which are the needs. And so as a result, it goes whizzing along, constructing strategies. But a good strategy not aimed at the need is like a good dart throw not aimed at the target. So skipping around here a little bit to sort of move through this chapter. When a need is unsatisfied, needs are at their most challenging when they are not satisfied. You first become aware of the need when you start to feel some vague, uncomfortable sensations in your body. If your need is unsatisfied, the sensations will be mildly unpleasant. In the standard NVC process, you name the feeling, then you identify the need, and then you make a request. It's a mental process to come up with a name for either the feeling or the need. If the need is unmet, then the next step in NVC suggests that you make a request of the other person, presumably for them to meet your need. Focusing on the feelings and needs does help turn your attention inward where needs reside. Though naming them can be such an intellectual process, it takes you up and away back into your head. But we believe the next step should be dealing with your needs. So yesterday we talked about this kind of new idea that I came up with, which is that there's these two, really three kinds of needs. There are our personal needs, ones that we need to meet ourselves. There are our relational needs, which it's nice to get met with other people. And then there are some needs that have elements of both, like security, for instance. And we suggest that you get the personal piece of it met first, the autonomous part, and then open up to the other. So I think Marshall kind of jumped to the idea that other people should be meeting our needs. But in relationships, in the work that we do, we find the idea that other people are responsible for our needs is responsible for a lot of arguments. And so we've inserted another step. This actually came from Stephen Michael Tumalo and maybe from Robert Gonzalez. I'm not sure which of the two of them originated this idea we're going to be talking about. Instead of making a request of other people, which can create the expectation that they are responsible for your needs, that can put you in a bind, especially if their answer is no. The difference between a request and a demand being that no is an acceptable answer to a request. your heart's request of you. So this is the extra step. This is another advance to Marshall's original NVC four-step process. Instead of struggling to name the feeling of the need, we encourage you to experience the sensations. Try to feel direct communication from the wordless need. Turn your attention inward and feel the energy and aliveness of the need and its sensation. So instead of even naming the feeling, and certainly instead of making a request of other people, what we suggest is that when you're aware that there's a sensation in your body, particularly an uncomfortable one, that although it's not the cultural norm, breathe into it and allow yourself to feel it, feel where it is alive. Different needs will activate different kinds of feelings and sensations in your body. Hunger is going to be in your stomach. Loss and mourning are likely to be an empty feeling, a feeling of disempowerment you might feel in your shoulders or in your hands or arms. Some of the sensations feel like movement. Some feel like a heaviness or a lightness. We're looking for really subtle sensations. The next step we suggest is to ask your heart what it is that it wants from you. So while you're in the aliveness of the sensation, ask your heart what it is that you're wanting. In relationship, when we have these uncomfortable feelings, what we often do is jump to judging our partner and what's wrong with them. So on some level, we do know when something's missing. We attack our partner for not giving it to us. What we're suggesting here is that instead of that, that you ask your heart what it is that it wants from you in response to this need. Let's say that I'm feeling lonely because my partner's been working long hours this week. Instead of jumping to making a request of my partner to change, which is likely to come out as a judgment of them, such as, "Why are you working so much?" I ask myself, heart that is feeling lonely, what is it that you want from me? In other words, what might I do differently to meet my own need? This is an incredibly powerful step that Marshall just missed. I might come up with the answer, I'm feeling a bit empty sensation. I haven't been paying attention to my own desire for connection, that's the need. I think instead of watching television and eating, I want to reach out and make contact with people and find something to do that is meaningful to me. Request of self. So you notice that although what I'm wanting is connection, which is a relational need, I was able to identify the need and even an action that I can take about a relational need by putting in the step after I experience the sensation and allow it to grow and really identify it and sit inside of it to ask my heart what it is it wants from me. It's pretty amazing the answers that people get. I'm also sensing warmth in my heart and a lump in my throat sensations. I interpret the first as longing and the second as sadness. I'm missing connection with my partner. That's the need. She's been working hard and I feel guilty about asking her for attention. So I've been laying low, self-responsible admission. Maybe I can tell her I'm feeling lonely, share what I'm realizing about myself in a vulnerable sharing, and ask if there's anything I can do to lighten her load. Offer to meet her needs instead of making a request about mine. Maybe there is something we could do together so we can both get our needs met, negotiating a strategy that might satisfy both of our needs. So this is a new step that we're inserting in about how you can be autonomous and self-satisfying and enter into a dialogue or even a negotiation with your partner from a self-satisfying place, a self-responsible place, and a vulnerable place. And you can do all of that just by listening to what's going on inside of yourself. When we did this work in prison, it was amazing the wisdom that prisoners came up with. Now, they didn't have a lot of resource for being able to make requests of others. You know, they're locked down a lot and the prison is not designed to meet their needs. And by doing this process and then communicating the kinds of things that they got in touch with, it was amazing the wisdom that they got in touch with. I remember one woman just gotten a call right before our NVC class in prison that her grandfather had died. And she came in feeling really terrible, realizing that getting into this trouble and ending up in prison had meant she hadn't seen him in the last years of his life. She was very distraught. So we did this process with her. And what she got in touch with was how strong the love was for her grandfather and how important connecting with him was. And the wisdom that came out of this was the realization that he'll always be with her and that he is with her while she's in prison, that he's with her while she's in prison even after he's passed. So not necessarily a logical result, but one that really satisfied her and is just not the kind of thing that your logical brain is going to be coming up with. And yet it deeply touched her and everybody in the class to see her go from the self-recrimination all the way to this sense of deep longing being satisfied and continuing to be satisfied for the rest of her life. When your needs can't be met, there are situations that are temporarily or permanently not well designed to meet your needs. Maybe you're feeling stress about paying bills and it will be a while before your finances can catch up with your expenses. Or maybe you're alone and you really want to be sharing your life with somebody, but there's no one on the horizon right now. What do you do? Creating satisfaction, the NVC magic trick. So this is actually something I did in a session with someone just today who's interested in being in relationship and doesn't have anybody right there on the horizon. Brain research has found that the mind can't tell the difference between a vividly imagined experience and actually living that experience. You know that when you have dreams, you can wake up. If you were dreaming you were in a really hot place, you might be sweating. If you are imagining really clearly and directly, can create a whole cascade of hormones and sensations and feelings that are the same ones that you would have if you were actually having that experience in the outside world. So if you find yourself in a situation that doesn't hold the promise of instant gratification, even if you ask, what we suggest is that you give yourself that experience by vividly imagining what it would be like to have all the satisfaction that actual experience would offer. So this is part of our NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and hypnosis training that we're incorporating in here as well. This is also very useful when translating judgments into needs. Remember, we express our needs as judgments when we despair of getting them met in the present situation. So after doing the double turnaround to identify the need, before bringing this difficult need to your partner, we suggest that you do the magic trick and allow yourself to feel the satisfaction of the need, and then invite your partner to join you in that satisfaction. Now, it can be a little hard to understand how you can feel the satisfaction of something you're not getting. And our answer to that is this. All of the universal human needs are universal. We know what they're like. If I say that you're not getting your need for connection met, you know what it feels like to feel connected. We all do. We know what all of the different needs feel like when they're being satisfied. So since you know what it feels like, you can use your imagination to experience that vividly and have those cascading body sensations. I mean, if I told you that your need for purple wasn't getting met, you wouldn't be able to do this because there is no need for purple. It's not a universal human need. But it turns out we all know what all of the universal needs feel like, and you can give it to you. By the way, it looks like I'm going to say this in the next paragraph. This is very much like The Secret, the movie The Secret, or manifestation technology. In order to bring something into your life and manifest it, using energy, this is the way to do it. It's the feeling state, not the thought. And it's certainly not the thought of not having it. That pushes it away and puts you in a sense of lack and dissatisfaction. We're talking about allowing yourself to feel the feelings of what it's like to have this need satisfied. You can do this by imagining the events and feeling the sensations that arise in your body, by reversing the steps that satisfied need takes, starting with the results that a satisfied need creates in us through visualization and feeling. The need will align itself with the body state you create. Although this may sound crazy, there's a lot of research and anecdotal evidence that it works. It's not just to fool yourself, but to actually move you into the experience of a satisfied need. In the meantime, you've actually experienced the satisfaction of your own need. So that's a suggestion that we have about how to deal with unsatisfied needs and get the satisfaction of them. It's very good for parking them. It's good for getting yourself in a positive state. It's good for creating manifestation. Coming from scarcity versus abundance. Our needs are selfish. Maybe that's where they get their bad rap. Our needs are needy. True, our needs are only trying to create something positive. But when they go unsatisfied, they don't soft pedal their desires. Just look at babies to see what an unsocialized, need-based being looks and behaves like. They kick and scream as soon as they experience an unsatisfied need. And it's not like they're curious about their impact on you or have any concerns about your needs. So as in any relationship with someone who is needy, we can become codependent in relationship to our own needs. They begin to kick and scream within us, and we get uncomfortable. And as a result, we can become needy, selfish, peevish, impatient, argumentative, judgmental, or even violent. Not the ideal emotional stance for negotiating and making sure everyone in the system gets their needs met. This is where the magic trick comes in. Give yourself the satisfaction internally, and then from that place of abundance, begin a needs-based negotiation with your partner to see if there's a solution that meets everybody's needs. It's an advanced relationship skill from the population who've come to see me to realize that one of the most important things you need to do to get your needs met is to negotiate getting your needs met at the same time as your partner gets their needs met. So if you have an uncomfortable feeling and you stick with that uncomfortable feeling, you may get into the state of scarcity and feel like, hey, listen, we got to talk about my needs and my needs only. And in fact, that's the message of anger. The message of anger is, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about my need and my need only, right? Now, nobody in their right mind would say, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. The fact that I have needs shouldn't matter in this conversation. So what anger is trying to do is to scare the other person into taking care of your needs to the exclusion of theirs, not how you do teamwork marriage or teamwork relationship. So one of the things that we need to be learning right away about needs is whenever you're doing relational needs, you're doing them in the state of negotiation, which is one of the reasons we believe mediation is the right technology for doing relationship. I also think this is a very important thing for parents. Very early on, your children, your babies, will be capable of being able to tell that you have needs also. We're hardwired to enjoy meeting each other's needs. The helicopter parenting that people are doing now, basically from a needs-based perspective, says, you know, well, as a parent, I don't have needs, so I'm going to take care of all of your needs, and I'm going to pretend like I don't have needs. I think that's a terrible message to give kids, because by the time they're teenagers and really starting to be in relationship, but when they start to do independent relationship, they've had 10 years or more of the experience that their needs count and they don't have to negotiate to get their needs met, which is why I think I'm getting so many couples now who don't understand that in relationship, you need to negotiate to get your needs met. Now, it turns out to be a good thing because when you do negotiate to get your needs met, all of the needs present in the room get opened up. And there's a good chance, since people are different than you, that they'll be bringing up needs that you weren't aware of that you have as well. Plus, we're hardwired to enjoy meeting each other's needs, so it's fun to find a way to meet their needs and yours at the same time. And in relationship, having two people whose needs are both being met is a wonderful experience. That's really the field in which you want to be doing your relationship. That's the end of our half hour together. They seem to go faster and faster. Maybe I'm having so much fun. I like to end with a homework assignment. And so I guess there's two things that I really would like for you to pay attention to in the next 24 hours. The first one is noticing any sensations of discomfort that you have and watch how you respond to them. And when I'm talking about the feelings chapter of the book, I write that I'm imagining that one of these days American cars are going to come with a $1,000 option of buying a strip with little black circles on them so that when your car pops up with one of those idiot lights that says you're out of oil or your engine needs checking, you can just take one of these black things and just put it on that light and block it so that you don't have to have the uncomfortable feelings that your car has a need and you don't want to have to deal with it. Well, that is what we do with our uncomfortable feelings. We block them. There's so many ways you can do it. You know, we have drugs and work and food and sex and just ignoring it and going up in your head and getting busy and all kinds of ways. And every beautiful message, even if it's uncomfortable, of your need telling you that there's something that you're needing, when you block it, that's a satisfaction that you're not going to be able to get. If you leave a need unsatisfied, it starts out with this kind of very subtle feeling. Over time, it pickles into frustration. If you leave it go longer, it pickles into anger. If you leave it go longer, it pickles into rage. And by the time you're raging, what you're thinking is, wow, they must have done something really bad for me to be this angry. From our perspective, all that happened was you didn't pay attention to your own dissatisfaction for this long amount of time. So over the next 24 hours, please pay attention to your discomfort and see if you can identify what it is that you're needing. Allow the discomfort, breathe into it, allow it to live inside of you and grow inside of you. And then talk to it. What is it that you're wanting from me? Heart that desires this feeling, what is it that you're wanting from me? For extra credit, from that place, see if you can imagine receiving it, having that need satisfied, and bring that to your partner or bring that out into your life and see if that makes a change. Okay, next we'll be starting a new chapter. I'll be seeing you. Have a great weekend. Bye.